So my name is Sylvia Tona. I recently moved to the University of Birmingham to join the faculty there. And I want to talk today about the evolution of stellar triples. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the evolution of these systems in general, and then in the second half talk about how these triples can give rise to gravitational wave sources. And so the kind of triples that I'm thinking about, they look like this. So we have two stars that are in an orbit around one another, and then a third star that's in a much wider orbit going around the center of mass of this inner binary. And today I'm only going to talk about triples that are isolated. So it's just three stars and how these three stars interact with one another. So no cluster environment, for example. And these systems we can approximate by existing of two orbits. So here in yellow you see the inner orbit, and in blue you see the outer orbit. So you're going to hear me talking about the inner orbit, and inner period, and outer period, and these kind of things, so then you know what I'm referring to. And these kind of systems that have these two orbits, that have a hierarchical structure, they can be stable for very long timescales. So this can be up to Hubble times. So they can be out there and survive and evolve on long timescales. And the other thing that's interesting about these systems is that they're abundant. And I want to quantify that, because what does that mean, right, if I say they're abundant? So I'm going to do that by looking at the binary fraction and the triple fraction. So that's what you see here on the y-axis. And on the x-axis, you see the spectral type of your most massive star in that system. Now, if we have a look at solar type stars, then we know that the binary fraction is about 50%. Now, if we go to more massive stars, it's been known for quite some time now that the binary fraction goes up. So the binary fraction for massive stars is at least 70%. It might even be as high as 100%. Now, what are triples doing? We have a very nice measurement based on the work from Andrei Tokovinin at solar masses. So here we know that the triple fraction is about 10%. So 10% is not super high, right? It's not 90%. But it's certainly not negligible, right? In the large samples that we have in these large-scale surveys, 10% still gives a lot of triples. And it roughly means that for every five binaries that we have, one of them has a third companion. Now, if we go to more massive stars, what is the triple fraction there? Well, we have a lower limit, and this is based on the work from Hugh Sana, and this is a lower limit of 30%. So the point that I want to make here is that triples seem to follow the same trend that the binaries are doing. So as we're going to more massive stars, triples become more abundant, or the systems tend to have more companions. And this this fraction here, this 30%, is a lower limit because it's not been corrected for selection effects. So this is something that Max Moe worked on in their paper in 2017. And what he tried to do is gather all the information that we have from all the different surveys about these initial populations of binaries, of triples, their periods, their mass ratios, and try to take into account the selection effects. And by interpolating between these surveys and extrapolating to the points where we don't have any data, he created a model, one of the best models we have at this point. And that's what I'm showing here. So on the y-axis, you see the fraction of binaries and triples and quadruples in these different colors. And on the x-axis, you see the mass of the primary star, so similar to the previous plot. And the thing that I want to draw your attention to is that as we're going to massive stars, so say like a 15 solar mass star, the majority of them isn't single. The majority of them in this model is not even binary. The majority has at least two companions. So let's see what these triples can do, right? So if we want to simulate the evolution of triples, it turns out we need three ingredients. We need to know how the stars evolve, how they interact with one another, so mass transfer, and we also need to know how tides affects the orbit and gravitational wave emission, how that changes the orbit. So these are the typical things that are involved in your isolated binary evolution as well. Now, for triples, there's one more ingredient, and that's the three body dynamics. And I want to show you some examples of how that works. Now, the lowest order of approximation in the three-body problem are called the cosine-Lyapunov cycles. And what's happening in these cycles is kind of shown in this figure here. You see the outer orbit again, and then you see the inner orbit. And during these cycles, the inner orbit changes its inclination. And at the same time as it's changing the inclination, also the eccentricity is changing. Now, the period of these cycles can be short, can be long, but to give you like a rough order of magnitude, it's roughly this ratio of the periods. So just have a look at how wide the outer period is. Now, why do I care about these Kozai-Lyapunov cycles? Well, that's because at high eccentricities, cool things happen. This is when the stars are very close to each other. This is when they interact. This is when tides are strong. And I want to give you one example. So in this plot here, I'm showing the orbital separation as a function of time. And in blue here, you see the evolution for one particular binary. I took a pretty wide one here, and pretty much nothing happens to it. It just becomes a little bit wider because a little bit of mass is lost in the stellar winds. Now, if I take the same binary and I put a third star around it, the evolution can be completely different. So what you see here is that very early on in these phases, there are these strong eccentricity cycles. So the eccentricity goes up and down. And at some point, it becomes so high that one of the stars here starts filling its Roche lobe. In this case, it's a very evolved star, it's an unstable phase of mass transfer, and the orbit shrinks quite drastically. Now, the inner orbit keeps evolving, there's another phase of mass transfer, the orbit shrinks even further, and eventually there's actually a merger between the two stars in that inner orbit. So that's here at, well, roughly 10 giga years later. In this case, it's actually a merger of two massive white dwarfs with a combined mass above Chandrasekhar, which means that this would be a classical supernova type 1a progenitor. So I can take a binary that's pretty boring and doesn't do much, and if I put a third star around it, it can become a supernova type 1a progenitor. So that's pretty cool. Now, I also want to say that, of course, I can come up with one example that does something cool, right? You can always come up with one crazy outlier. So the question is, how often is that third star really important for the evolution of the triples? And that's something that we're trying to answer. So with that in mind, we wrote a code to simulate the evolution of triples in a consistent way, taking into account the stellar evolution, the dissipative processes, and the three-body dynamics all at the same time. And, I went back to my code, and I cranked up a population of triples and tried to see what are they evolving through and how is this different from binaries. I did this, well, I started with stars with primaries between 1 and 7.5 solar masses, so these are not the massive stars that we're interested in here, but you have to start somewhere, and these stars are a little bit simpler than the massive stars because they don't have supernova cakes. So I'm going to start with this. What I find is that there's roughly 5 different evolutionary channels that these systems go through. And the far majority here in blue is that the most massive star in your inner binary is going to fill the Roche lobe. That happens in about 2/3 to 3/4 of all the triples. Well, it's a nice number, right? But what does that mean? And for that, we have to compare it to binaries. Now, in this same mass range, what we would expect is that binaries fill their Roche lobe at about 30 to 40% of all the systems. So this means that mass transfer in a population of triples, mass transfer is much more likely to happen in a triple than in binaries. And this is for 2 reasons. One, that outer star is driving that inner binary to mass transfer. But the other reason is also that the inner orbits of triples are more compact or tend to be more compact than those of normal binaries, because you still need to fit 2 stars in the same amount of you need to fit an extra star in that same amount of space. Now we also have, so one other cool thing about these systems is when they fill their Roche lobe, they're very often still eccentric. So in about 40% of my triples, the orbit is still significantly eccentric, and this is something that we do not typically expect in classical binary evolution theory. And most of the time, so here you can see that it does depend on what kind of donor star we have. And especially if we have a main sequence star donor, then the orbits are very, very often still eccentric. Okay, then I really go to my other channels. So in a few percent of cases, I find that it's a secondary star that fills the Roche lobe. This is also something we don't really expect. So that the secondary star fills the Roche lobe before the primary does, again, not something we really expect in classical binary evolution theory. I also found some systems in which it's the outer star that fills the Roche lobe that starts throwing mass into that inner binary. Some percent of cases, the triples become dynamically unstable. This is very interesting because during those dynamical interactions, the ones that you're, well, you're typically used to of thinking that happen in cluster environments. So in those interactions, the stars can come very close to each other and we can even get collisions. So a fraction of these systems that become unstable can lead to collisions between stars. So it is possible to get collisions between stars, even in the field. You don't need to be in a cluster environment to do that. And the last fraction, this purple fraction, it's about 20 to 30%. Pretty much nothing happens to the triple. There's no mass transfer. It doesn't become dynamically unstable. The stars just pretty much evolve as if they're a single star, and they stay in that triple. And it's nice to see that with Gaia, we actually discovered the first of such an object. So with Gaia, we found a triple white dwarf with white orbits, so that we're pretty sure that they have not undergone any mass transfer. So this is a nice confirmation that, you know, these triples can survive for long time scales and can survive through these mass wind mass loss phases. So now I want to make that transition towards a gravitational wave progenitors. And the thing is that so far I've been talking about these triples in, you know, quite a general way, right? Just five different evolutionary channels, and I haven't been talking about what happens if we calculate through that first phase of mass transfer. The thing is that, well, triple evolution is complicated, and we're just starting to do that, so we just haven't done those simulations yet. Triple evolution is complicated, binary evolution is already complicated, right? So it's possible that a good fraction of all these, well, that this pie chart, I should divide up in many different sub-channels, and there's a good chance that many of those sub-channels would lead to a gravitational wave source as well. But that's something that we just cannot answer yet. But there's one channel that we have studied in a lot of detail, and that's the one that I want to show you in the last slides of my presentation. Still a good couple of minutes. So let me show you how this channel works. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with three massive stars in white orbits. Now, the stars are going to evolve, so one star is going to go supernovae, form a black hole, then the other star is going to go supernovae, we get the second black hole, and then the third star is going to go supernovae. I don't really care much here in which order this happens, as long as I end up with my three black holes in a triple. Now, in the last step of the evolution, the inner binary merges because of the secular dynamics, because of the three body dynamics in the triple. Now, I'm going to start out with saying what is difficult in this scenario. So I'm going to start out with some criticism, I guess. So I want the merger to happen in this stage, when we have two black holes in that inner binary, and not in any of those phases before. So not when we still have stars in the system. So we need to avoid the merger to happen over here. So I'm going to avoid systems that go through mass transfer. They might still give us a gravitational wave source, but it's just a different channel. I also need to avoid that these triples disrupt because of the supernova kick. And this is something that Ylva already told us about, that can be complicated. Many of the binaries dissolve, and that's the same for these triples. Well, on the plus side, the advantage of this model is that we don't have any mass transfer phases. All of these complications about how mass transfer affects the stars, how a common envelope works, which systems can survive the common envelope phase, all of those uncertainties do not play a role here. So in our scenario, these inner two stars, they are merging not because of a common envelope phase that shrunk the orbit, but because of the three-body dynamics that makes the inner orbit, the inner stars come closer to each other. Okay, so what we did is I went back to my code TRAS and I simulated the evolution of these triples, tried to see which one really survives until this phase, taking into account all the three-body dynamics. And Fabio Antonini took my simulations and then calculated which ones of these can actually lead to that merger. And what we find is that the rate is roughly of the order of 1 per year per gigaparsec cubed. That means, in my point of view, that this is an interesting channel for LIGO, right? This is a competitive channel for LIGO, I would say. And then last year, Carl Rodriguez followed this up, because so far we were looking at solar metallicities, and they followed up and tried to see what the rate is at lower metallicities, and the rate goes up for the classical reasons that your stellar winds are less strong, the more stars likely go through a fallback scenario, so there's smaller supernova kicks, and then more triples can survive. So up to rates of several, maybe even several tens per year per gigaparsec cubed. I just want to mention real quick that it is important to take into account the prior evolution of these triples. So what you see here is a distribution of inclinations in red of the ones that merge. And you see that they're very strongly peaked to an inclination of 90 degrees, because this is where the three-body dynamics gives you the highest eccentricities, so where it's most likely that we get a merger. In the black, you see the systems that form a triple black hole. And those are all avoiding this area of an inclination of 90 degrees, because if you're there, you would likely interact before you have a triple black hole, so you would get mass transfer. So if you assume a constant or an isotropic distribution of inclinations, then you would overestimate how many of the triples would be in this part. I want to mention some of the characteristics of this channel, and one of them is the eccentricity. So in this channel, you would expect relatively high eccentricities. So in our paper, we find a peak at around 10 to the minus 3 at a frequency of 10 hertz. A few percent of the systems, I think it's about 3%, they have an eccentricity above 0.1. Thank you. So an eccentricity above 0.1, which means that LIGO might be able to observe that. For the other ones, it's going to be hard for LIGO to observe an eccentricity of 10 to the minus 3. But it might be possible to do that with LISA. It's actually to the point that the eccentricity in LISA would be that high that even LISA has a hard time observing the eccentricity. So that would be the case for roughly half of our systems. And recently there was a paper that came out that I thought was very interesting, because they studied if we could see... So these systems are undergoing these Kozai-Lido cycles, so their eccentricities are changing, and that can give rise to a gravitational wave frequency observable by LISA. So can you see a number of triples that are going through these eccentricity cycles? And they found that it is possible to see that out to a few megaparsec. So the other things that is plotted in this diagram is the eccentricity distribution from some of the other channels. So the classical binary evolution channel and the classical clusters. And you see that ours are significantly more eccentric. I do want to update that. So I took a plot from Carl's paper, because in this simulation, they didn't take into account secular evolution for the triples, nor the 2.5 PM term in the dynamical encounters. And if you do that, then you also get higher eccentricities in the cluster environments. So I think it might be hard to differentiate between the channels just based on the eccentricity. And I hope actually this is something that maybe we can discuss further this week. But I would advocate that maybe we should look at this different, that if you see an eccentricity, maybe we cannot say if it comes from an isolated triple or from a cluster environment. But if it's eccentric, then we might say that this comes from a system that involved more than two stars. So if it's circular, you say it's a two-body event, and if it's eccentric, then more than two bodies are involved in the merger. The last slide that I want to show you is about the spins that we expect from this channel, and this is based on a series of papers from Bin Lui and Dong Lai and Carl and Fabio Antonini. Again, plots taken from Carl's paper. And what they find is that there's roughly two different regimes for these mergers. And in one regime, the orange one, you expect roughly an isotropic distribution of spins. And in the other one, it's a distribution that peaks at small values of chi effective. Now, it's a bit complicated to explain the full difference between these channels, but just to give you a little bit of an idea, in the orange one, what you get is that we start with this triple, and in the inner binary, we get these strong Kozai-Lidov cycles. And in this case, it's a very strong three-body dynamics. So either those higher terms in the three-body dynamics, the octuple term, or maybe even the semi-secular regime is important. But that inner orbit all of a sudden gets an extremely high eccentricity. So it plunges in, and these two stars are all of a sudden very close to each other. When they're very close to each other, gravitational wave emission takes over. The stars never widen again, and the Kozai-Lidov cycles are quenched because the stars are now so close together. But this is almost a stochastic effect. So the inclination that you're at that point is almost a random thing. So what you end up with is a spin distribution that's also roughly random. The other scenario is a much more gradual process. So in this case, the Kozai-Lidov cycles are gradually quenched over time and you freeze out. And you tend to freeze out at an inclination of 90 degrees between the inner and the outer orbit. And then you, if you do the full calculation, you get a chi effective that peaks around zero. And here you see also that the two regimes are very clearly can be differentiated based on their eccentricity. So if you plunge in, you get a very high eccentricity and this more uniform distribution of spins. So before Philip pushes me away, this is my summary slide. So I just want to say that triples are abundant. We're starting to simulate how these triples evolve, how they evolve differently from binaries, what they can do that binaries cannot. I think they're interesting in a variety of astrophysical topics. And one of them is gravitational wave interaction. We've studied one channel that gives a rate that I think is interesting for LIGO, that's competitive for LIGO. And I think the future is bright, and let's see if there's more channels out there and what their characteristics and demographics are.
Thank you, Sylvia. Questions? Yes.
I kind of disagree with the statement that if you consider Kozai-Lidov resonance, don't need to worry about stellar and binary evolution, because in the end you cannot switch off stellar and binary evolution. So even when you are considering the mergers that happens,
I didn't say that you can ignore binary.
You say that your channel of Kozai-Lidov is nice because it does not depend on the details of binary evolution. This is true, yeah. But after you reach a triple systems with three black holes. So I think the binary evolution, unfortunately for us, binary evolution and single stellar evolution and Kozai-Lidov are deeply mixed in the end to determine the statistics of mergers.
I'm not fully understanding what you're saying. So the only point that I wanted to make is that this channel doesn't go through mass transfer. So any of the uncertainties in mass transfer is not included in the channel. But of course there's orbits.
Of course,
and
but
there's
before
wind
before
mass
in
losses.
The evolution of the especially the inner binary, you add processes like mass transfer. And this can determine, it's not necessary for your mergers, but this happens in real life. You know, stars evolve in real life.
So Well, I guess there was a tone and in preparation, so maybe I should just wait for that. But I was curious about the how you model the population of triplets. Is this based on the observations that we have, are probably very incomplete and very biased? So how?
Do you mean like the initial population of triples that
right,
start to
from which you get those like few percent?
Yeah. So I took three different models, which is like a roughly our best understanding of how triples look like. So for the lower mass systems, we have a better understanding of their orbits. The interesting thing actually is that the initial distribution of triples matters less for triple evolution. And part of that is because, well, we need to have a triple that's dynamically stable, and that puts a pretty strong bias on which orbits and which configurations are possible. So even when I started my models with quite different orbital period distributions, the ones that give rise to a stable triple were much more similar to one another. So there's less uncertainty in that, in the orbital from the periods. Well, then we can argue, how good do we know the eccentricity distribution? How good do we understand the inclination distribution? So those uncertainties we still have.
Yeah. What is known observationally about the mass ratios of existing triples? Part of the reason for my question is that the 90 degrees for the Kozai leadoff is what happens when the tertiary dominates the angular momentum of the system. So if you tend to have lighter objects on the outside, then it might be a different distribution.
Yeah. I would say most of our knowledge is then based on binaries. So I would roughly split it up into compact ones and the wider ones, where there seems to be a trend that if you go to wider orbits, the mass ratios are lower, which means that if you would do that for a triple, also on average, your tertiary would be lower, lower mass. Yeah.
I just had a sort of related question as to what you assume for the upper limit of the semi-major axis of the outer star in
okay.
the triplet?
Yeah. So here I took 5 × 10⁶ solar radii. So that's the same upper limit as I would put for binaries as well.
Okay. So, I mean, your statistics must be pretty sensitive to that, right?
In which way?
Well, just because, I mean, I guess I could argue kind of cynically that every stellar binary is a hierarchical triple where the triplet is a parsec away, right?
That's true, but at some point the binary wouldn't be gravitationally bound anymore. So at some point, if you go much wider than this, the orbits would unbind from interactions with other stars, from the gravitational potential, from the Milky Way. So this is where my upper boundary is based on.
Okay, so it's really something related to like the velocity distribution of the stars. Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Can I ask
Brian?
I was just curious about how well stable versus unstable mass transfer is understood in the eccentric limits.
Oh.
When you're driving these things together, how are your descriptions?
I would say not yet, but I think Fanny was in the audience, right? So Fanny is one of the people that's actually working on trying to understand how mass transfer happens in an eccentric orbit. So the next thing I want to do is implement. So that's the next step that I want to do.
There's another thing like triple common envelope evolution, but that's for another topic, for another day. Okay. Any further questions? No? Okay. Let's thank Sylvia again. Mm-hmm.